The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
And thank you all for tuning in, and welcome back to another episode of Mystery Frequency, where classic stories are waiting to be heard once more. Please be sure to check the archives for over 300 episodes. And also, let me know what you think of the show. You can reach out through my email at mysteryfrequencypodcast@gmail.com, my social media at mysteryfreak, F-R-E-Q on Twitter, Mystery Frequency on Instagram, and I also have links to my website and store. All those can be found in the description. And if you enjoyed this podcast, it would be great if you could follow, review, and leave a rating. And to all those who have followed me, it would be great if you could leave a rating. The higher the rating, the easier it is for people to find this podcast and enjoy these great stories. And speaking of which, please enjoy the show.
It was hot, boiling hot that night. I wanted to grab a beer and turn in early. So what happens? I get my beer, but with it comes a gunshot, a beautiful woman in trouble, and murder.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime mystery, CBS presents his most famous character, brought to you now in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. With Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's unusual story, Red Wind.
There was a rough desert wind blowing into Los Angeles that evening. It was one of those hot, dry Santa Anas that come down through the mountain passes and curl your hair and make your nerves jump and your skin itch. On nights like that, every booze party ends in a fight, and meek little housewives feel the edge of a carving knife and study their husbands' necks. Anything can happen when the Santa Ana blows in from the desert. I closed up my office early. I got tired of reading Philip Marlowe, Private Investigator, backwards on the ground glass of my office door. So I locked up and decided a nice cold beer would taste good before I went up to my apartment.
Filler up again, Mr. Marlin?
Marlowe.
Marlin.
Yeah, Marlin's a fish.
Yeah, I know.
Marlin's also the name of a lady on the radio. Marlin, comma, Mary, the story of.
Yeah, my wife listens to it.
Yeah, good for her.
Hey, you bartender. Another rye.
Yeah, that drunk again.
What do you expect in this business, autograph hounds?
Make it sappy. You hear?
Be right with you, sport. Gotta draw this man a beer. Crying out loud, these stumble bums.
Hey, Bud.
You got another customer, Backus?
Hey, Bud, you seen a lady in here lately?
A lady?
Tall, good-looking, brown hair, a print bolero jacket, and a blue silk dress.
No, sir.
No, sir.
Nobody like that, Spinion.
All right, straight scotch, fast.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
As the man drank, I noticed the drunk was grinning at him. And then, without changing his grin, the drunk swept a gun from somewhere so fast it was just a blur coming out. Made a couple of hard snaps and a little smoke, very little.
You other guys, don't move. So long, Waldo. Don't move, you two. Poor Waldo. I bet I made his nose bleed. So long, boys. Drink up.
Get on the phone, kid. I'll get his license number.
Holy smoke.
Too late. He drove away in the dead guy's car.
Maybe he ain't dead.
No, he's dead all right.
Oh.
That guy was using a .22 target pistol. Yeah. When they use that kind of gun, they don't make mistakes. Where's your phone? This is for the police. Prowl car boys were there in 5 minutes. Waldo was out of business, all right. Nothing in his pockets told who he was, but he had about $700 on him. And with that kind of heavy coin, you can buy a good 1910 automobile even today. Well, I told the cops what I knew, including about Waldo's brown-haired pretty girl in the bolero jacket. It was about 9 o'clock when I stepped out of the elevator in my apartment house and almost walked right into a brown-haired pretty girl in a bolero jacket, waiting for the elevator on my floor.
Oh, excuse me.
Just a minute, lady.
What is it?
I'm a great admirer of bolero jackets.
What?
Now, take the one you've got on, for instance.
I'm sorry, but I'm in a hurry.
No, wait.
If you'll be good enough to let me... Oh, you've made me miss the elevator.
It's just as well.
What?
Well, it's better you don't go out in those clothes.
Just what do you mean?
Tall, good-looking, bolero jacket, blue silk dress. Mm-hmm. Lady, might I take the trouble of telling you that you're in trouble?
Trouble?
Yeah, the cops are looking for you. In those clothes.
I haven't done anything.
Maybe not. But if I were you, I'd have a little talk with me.
I've all the
nerve...
I'm
in room 41 across the hall. And I know things about you.
Well...
Good girl. Come along. It took a firm grip on her arm, but I managed to get her to my room. I rustled up some drinks, but when I turned to give her hers, I saw she held a small automatic. She looked at me steadily. I put down both glasses slowly so I wouldn't be misunderstood. Look, sister, I know it's hot tonight and heat does funny things to people, but let's put that little thing away and have a nice cool drink, huh?
Don't move.
Oh, I'm strictly frozen in my tracks.
Stay that way.
Okay. But wouldn't you like to know that I'm a private detective?
Private detective?
Yeah, I can prove it if you'll let me. Yeah, that's better. Yeah, I don't like those things pointed at me.
I'll have that drink.
Oh, good. I don't often give good liquor away like this. I can't afford it.
Why are they after me?
Well, a man was just shot in a bar down the street. Before he got it, he'd been asking about a tall, pretty girl with a bolero jacket.
What did he look like? This man.
Oh, he was tall, about 5'11". Slim, dark brown eyes with a lot of glitter. Dark suit, white handkerchief in the breast pocket. And he must have seen you earlier tonight to know how you were dressed. Am I getting anywhere?
He used to be my chauffeur.
You had an appointment with him, didn't you? He asked for you, didn't he?
Yes, I had an appointment with him. He'd stolen something from me when he left 3 days ago. I was going to buy it back from him.
Why didn't you tell the police?
I couldn't tell him.
It was valuable, wasn't it? Valuable enough for Waldo to steal.
$15,000.
Peanuts.
But it wasn't the value. You see, it meant something to me. The man I loved gave it to me. Now he's dead. He was shot down over Germany. I'll go back and tell my husband that. He probably hired you.
He did? How much is he paying me? And where is this husband of yours?
He's at a meeting.
This late at night?
He's a very important man. He's a hydroelectric engineer.
Never mind about him. What about Waldo? Why was he knocked off?
You mean he's dead? Waldo is dead?
Yes, sister, he's dead. Very dead. Oh. Screaming won't bring him back.
I'm not going to scream. Who would that be?
There's a dressing room behind the door. Hide there. Take your glass with you.
All right.
I went to the door, making a loud, yawning sound. Foolishly, I didn't have my gun. That was a mistake. Because when I opened the door, the guy on the other side certainly had one. A .22 target automatic that had already killed one man that night. And I knew the bald head, the flat, shiny eyes, and the face like a poisonous lizard. Baldy put the muzzle of his gun lightly against my throat. I backed into the room and Baldy kicked the door shut.
You alone?
Look for yourself.
I'm asking, not looking.
I'm alone.
You and that dumb bartender saw me dust off Waldo.
What did Waldo do to you?
Who's asking?
Just making conversation.
He stooled on me on a bank job we did together. Got me 4 years in Michigan Penn. How is he?
Dead.
Well, I'm still good, drunk or sober. Tell me why I came here, pal.
You heard the barkeep and me talking. I told him my name and where I lived.
That's how, pal. I said why.
Skip it. The hangman won't ask you to guess why he's there.
You're pretty tough at that, ain't you, pal? But you're slamming off.
All right. But, could you get that gun out of my neck and try somewhere else, just any place?
This better? This suits you all right?
Yeah, just so it isn't my neck.
Say when, pal. It's your party.
I leaned against the gun weakly. The door of the dressing room showed a crack of darkness. The crack widened. I began to shake a little in spite of the heat. The girl came quietly into the room, but there was white all around her irises. She was scared. She had a gun in her hand, but I was sorry for her. Dead sorry. She tried to make the door a scream. Either way, it would be curtains for both of us.
Scared, mister? Worried about any little thing?
I couldn't talk. The girl floated in the air somewhere behind Baldy. The horrified face was drifting toward us. My mouth was as cold and dry as yesterday's toast.
Well, kid, how's it feel? You ready yet? Say the word.
Well, don't take all night about it. If you're going to do something about it, do it.
Why not, pal? I like this.
Suppose I yell.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Put up your hand.
Hey, look! Thanks, sister. That buys me. Everything I have is yours, now and forever.
Is he dead?
You flatter me no end, lady. I only punched him. Now get out of here while I call the cops down on this killer.
Yes. Good night.
Wait a minute. That jacket marks you for the cops. Leave it here. You don't need it in this kind of weather.
Oh, yes, here.
Okay. See you again.
Why?
I don't know. Who am I to be the rival of a dead flyer and things like that? Now, on second thought, forget the whole thing. I'll see that the police get Jesse James here. Good night, lady. Yeah? You mean me?
Yes, please.
Oh. You again.
Get in. I want to talk to you.
You want to know what happened at headquarters?
Yes.
I went down to headquarters with the law and gave them the story. I left you out of it.
Oh, thanks.
You saved my life. So no one knows anything about you. Incidentally, neither do I.
My name is Mrs. Frank Barsley. 212 Fremont Place. Olympia 24596. Is that what you wanted?
I guess so.
Well, there it is.
Now, why'd you really come back?
I wanted my pearls.
Oh, no. Pearls, too?
Yes.
All right, tell me about the pearls. We've had a murder, a beautiful mystery woman, and a sadistic killer, and an heroic rescue. Now we will have pearls.
I was to buy them back from the man called Waldo.
Well, I saw everything that came out of his pockets. There weren't any pearls.
Could they be hidden in his apartment?
It's possible.
Waldo lived on the same floor you do, in this apartment house.
And why didn't I know him, at least by sight?
Well, he just moved in last week. He managed to get a sublet.
Sort of amateur magician on the side, huh?
It's getting rather late.
Yeah. What about your husband this hot, mysterious night?
He's still at his meeting.
Good.
Why did you say that?
I didn't have any answers. We just sat there looking at one another. I was suddenly aware of the hot desert wind stirring up the night. I took hold of her and I kissed her. She sat very still. I was shaking when I let go of her. Her voice trembled a little when she spoke.
I meant you to do that. Oh, I wasn't always this way. Only since Johnny Dalmas was killed in the war. He gave me those pearls. 41 of them. With a diamond propeller clasp. I'd have loved them if they were wooden beads because he gave them to me. I loved Johnny. The way you love just one time. You understand that?
Yes, I can. What I don't understand is how you could explain a $15,000 pearl necklace to your husband.
I told him they were imitation, that I bought them myself.
How did Waldo latch onto them and what they stood for?
When my husband was in Argentina, Waldo and I would go for long drives. I was restless and wretched because of Johnny. Sometimes Waldo and I had a little drink together. But that was all.
But you confided in Waldo about those pearls.
Yes.
And when your husband came back, Waldo stole the pearls and offered to sell them back to you. He'd tell Papa.
Oh, I was a fool.
And now you think the pearls are upstairs in Waldo's apartment.
I suppose it's a lot to ask.
I've been paid. Now go look. Wait here. Was I gone long,
no.
Lola?
Well?
No.
No pearls?
No pearls.
Oh.
There was a man in Waldo's room.
Man?
You know a guy named Leon Velasanos?
No, not by name. I don't know him.
Mexican, South American, about 45, small, iron gray hair, very neat. Fawn-colored suit, wine-colored tie.
No, I don't think I know such a man. You say he was in the room?
Yeah.
What did he say?
Very little. In fact, nothing. He was dead.
You are listening to The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by one of America's most outstanding writers of crime and mystery fiction, Raymond Chandler. Our story for today, The Red Wind, continues in just a moment. But first, a message of interest for all young men. How would you like to be up there in the wild blue sky, flying America's mightiest bombers, fastest fighters, and newest jet jobs? Believe me, it's a great feeling to know that you have the skill, the courage it takes to become a pilot officer in the United States Air Force, the Air Force that's second to none. Keep your eye on the local newspapers and your nearest Army Air Force recruiting station. An aviation cadet recruiting team will be in your community soon. If you're between the ages of 20 and 26 and a half years of age, single, and a high school graduate, plan to see the Aviation Cadet interviewing team. If you pass the mental and physical examination, you'll be accepted for the 52-week Aviation Cadet training program. When you graduate, you'll be a second lieutenant in the U.S. Air Force, the mightiest of all. And now, back to the adventures of Philip Marlowe. With Gerald Moore as our star, we continue today's adventure.
I sat with Lola Bosley in her car, listening to the hot wind gallop around in the midnight streets. I just told her about the Latin-looking man I'd found in Waldo's room in a very dead condition. I held her hands until they stopped trembling, and then I gave her the few remaining details. He had a gun in a shoulder holster, but someone had strangled him before he could set up in business with a gun.
Someone? You mean Waldo?
Maybe. You see that convertible coupe two cars ahead of us?
Oh, it's been there for hours. There before I parked here to wait for you.
Leon, the guy in Waldo's room, came in that car. But according to the key container he carried, it isn't his car.
Well, whose car is it? Does it matter?
Yeah, it belongs to a lady, according to the tag on the car keys. Eugenie Kolchenko, West Los Angeles.
Never heard of her.
Mm-hmm. Well, you better go home now.
What are you going to do?
I'll drive that flossy convertible around and wave at my friends. Impress people. You run along now. Me, I've got another date.
Yes, what is it, please?
Miss Eugenie Kolchenko?
Yes, what is it?
Did you lose or misplace a pigeon gray convertible coupe?
What are you saying?
Oh, don't be alarmed, I found it, brought it home to you.
Come in, please. It is a reward you wish. Shall we say...
Snap out of a dragon, lady. Who was he?
Was who?
A little guy, Leon. You loaned your car to. He's dead. Who was he?
Oh, no. No.
Eugenie.
Darling, darling, come here, please.
What's the matter, my dear? Who is this man?
I came about Miss Kolchenko's car.
What about her car?
Well, the gentleman who borrowed it couldn't return it on account of he isn't alive.
He's dead, darling. He is dead.
That's putting it more bluntly, of course.
Dead, huh?
Yeah, completely.
Who are you?
Philip Marlowe, private investigator. My card.
Have you told the police yet?
Never do at once what can be profitably deferred pending negotiation. Aesop.
I might negotiate.
Peachy.
Just what do you know, Marlowe?
Well, a man named Waldo was shot in a bar tonight. I happen to have the inside as to who he was, and when I visited his apartment tonight, I found this Leon Velasanos dead.
He wouldn't have had $500 in 20s on him, would he?
No. But this Waldo had over $700 on him when he was killed in that cocktail bar, mostly in 20s. Is there a basis for negotiation yet?
Very well, Marlowe. There were certain bills for some stuff Miss Kolchenko here had charged to my account.
But, darling, you told me I might charge to your account.
All right, my dear, so I wasn't bright.
That might be the understatement of the decade, but go on.
I had the bills safely in my briefcase. Somehow, this Waldo had a chance to steal the briefcase. I hired Leon, gave him $500 to buy back those bills from Waldo.
Instead, Waldo took Leon's coupons, was forced to kill Leon in the process. Then he went out to keep another date and walked into an old pal hostile enough to blow him down, huh?
Then somebody still has those bills, and I'm in for a divorce suit, huh?
The man who shot Waldo got away in Waldo's car with your briefcase in it, could be. Cops caught him.
And the police have the briefcase?
Maybe. But the police are interested in solving crimes, not in tossing mud for the benefit of sensation eaters. I have a friend or two at headquarters. Let me see what I can do.
It's worth $500 to me, Marlowe.
Then that's what it'll cost you.
Good luck, and thank you, Mr.
Marlowe. Philip Marlowe, remember?
Marlowe. My name is Frank Barsley.
Barsley? Oh.
And just what does that mean?
The big hydroelectric engineer.
Yeah. Yes, how'd you know?
Never mind. May I use your telephone? Someday I must tell you about Ibarra. Now he's a salt of the earth, Ibarra. Detective lieutenant over at Central Homicide. Well, I phoned Ibarra from Miss Kolchenko's house and told him where he could find a well-dressed cadaver named Leon and furnished a few small details. I gave Ibarra time to check my tip, and then I went down to see the good lieutenant and told him why I'd been up in Waldo's room, only to find Leon instead of a certain lady's string of pearls.
Pearls, eh?
Yeah, I thought Waldo might have had them up there.
Whose pearls were they?
The ladies.
Go on.
Or they might have been in Waldo's car that Waldo's killer drove away in.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
They might have.
Yeah. Also a batch of bills charged to the account of a certain Frank Barsley.
Yeah.
The police aren't interested in domestic scandal. They want to prevent or solve crimes, right?
So?
So I've got $500 for the police fund. If those pearls and those bills are returned to their rightful owners.
Quit your kidding.
It's a valuable necklace.
Yeah. There's your necklace. Take it away.
On the level, Ibarra?
Just tell me straight what it's all about. All I ask.
Sure, sure. Well, you see, this Waldo was blackmailing a wife with the pearls and her husband with the bills.
Mm-hmm.
Barsley, that's the guy's name, sent Leon to get the bills from Waldo. Waldo killed him and then stepped out and got nailed by that guy in the bar he'd stool-pigeoned against once.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if Barsley's name stays out of the papers, I get 500 bucks. It goes to the police fund.
Thanks. We'll keep them out.
I'm not in this case for money. I just want to get back the bills and the pearls.
Sure. And like you say, Marlowe, the police aren't in business to sling mud.
Look, you can deliver the pearls to the lady yourself if you like.
No, you better take them to her, Marlowe. You see, except for that diamond propeller clasp on them, they're phony.
Phony?
But look, Marlowe, I know pearls. Real pearls feel gritty between the teeth. These are hard and glassy. Try.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're phony. All but the clasp, Marlowe. All but the clasp.
I took the pearls and had them appraised the next morning at a gilt-edged place in Beverly Hills. Phony all but the clasp. An imitation as good as these couldn't have been made that fast. These were the pearls that Waldo had stolen. I took the glass pearls to a dive on Melrose and had them duplicated for $20. I had the jeweler attach the diamond clasp to the $20 duplicate string of pearls. Then I called up Lola. Hello, Lola. Okay, you're in?
Oh, Mr. Marlowe. Yes, it's okay here.
I have a string of pearls for you.
Oh, really, Philip? Really, did you get...
Now, wait a minute, Lola. Waldo was getting set to jip you. We sold the real pearls and made up a string. with the diamond clasp.
Oh. Well, may I at least have the clasp?
Sure. Meet me at 4 at Nikolaev's.
Nikolaev's at 4. I'll be there.
There you are, Lola. These are the pearls the police found in Waldo's car.
You were right. They're not my pearls.
I'm sorry, Lola.
No. Still have the clasp that Johnny gave me.
Well, I'm happy if you are.
Happy? No, not quite happy. See, this morning my husband told me we're to separate.
No, I'm very sorry, Lola.
You've been very kind.
That's all right.
This is... goodbye, I suppose.
Yeah. You'll never get over Johnny Dalmas. Goodbye, Lola. If anybody ever bothers you again, let me know, huh? Name's Marlowe. Philip Marlowe.
I'll remember. Philip Marlowe.
I drove almost to Malibu, and then I parked. And then I walked, way out on a rock cliff jutting into the Pacific Ocean. And then I reached into my pocket and dug out the string of Bohemian glass pearls Lieutenant Ibarra had found in Waldo's car. I cut the knot at one end and slipped the pearls off, one by one. One by one, I flipped them into the water. Should have seen the gulls swoop down on them. And then they flapped up again, screaming indignantly. Phony pearls. They'd fooled Waldo and Lola Barsley. But they couldn't fool a seagull. I said aloud, to the memory of Johnny Dalmas, just another four-flusher. I listened a while to the wheeling seagulls. All at once, I realized that the wind had died. The Santa Ana had blown itself out. The red wind was done. It was over. It was cool again.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler, stars Gerald Moore and is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. In tonight's story, Red Wind, Lola was played by Peggy Weber, and Barry Kroger was Baldy. Joan Banks played Eugenie Kolchenko. Jeff Corey was Lieutenant Ibarra. Parley Bear was Barsley. Lou Krugman was Waldo, and Wilms Herbert played the bartender. The special music was conceived and conducted by Ivan Ditmars. Philip Marlowe will be back in just a moment. Young man, be a Marine. Combine travel, adventure, and education at no expense to yourself. When you're a Marine, you can travel to the far places of the earth and carry on at the same time your own educational program through free Marine Corps Institute correspondence courses. You have plenty of courses to choose from, and an ideal way of studying geography or history is to take a course dealing with the background of the area in which you are stationed, or any of the more than 160 Marine Corps Institute courses. Thanks to this Marine Corps Institute, thousands of Marines are making continual educational advancements during their service in the U.S. Marine Corps. That opportunity upon becoming a U.S. Marine is yours for the asking. Check with your nearest Marine Corps recruiting office tomorrow for complete information. Next week at this same time, be sure to tune in for another adventure of Philip Marlowe, when Marlowe says...
I was low, very low the night I set out searching for the girl with the strange hazel eyes. The fog which hung over Los Angeles didn't help. And I felt even worse when I found her. For by then I had death on my hands.
If you like your laughs mingled with spicy music, be around tomorrow to hear the premiere of Alka-Seltzer Time, featuring Herb Schreiner and Raymond Scott's quintet. There'll be guest stars, too. Here's a show that's guaranteed to keep Monday from being blue. It's coming your way Mondays through Fridays over most of these CBS stations. So consult your local newspaper for the time of Alka-Seltzer Time. This is Roy Rowan speaking for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
I felt low, very low, the night I set out searching for the girl with the strange hazel eyes. The fog which hung over Los Angeles didn't help, and I felt even worse when I found her. For by then I had death on my hands.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character as CBS presents... The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. And now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's gripping story, The Persian Slippers.
One of those thin, chilly fogs had sneaked in from the Pacific and had hung vaguely to the streetlights along the Sunset Strip. It was a kind of a fog that you could see through, but everything was out of focus. It made you start wondering what you were going to do when you were 90 and you were all alone. I'd have liked to have spent the night in a room full of noisy extroverts playing charades. But instead, I had to eat a quick dinner and drive up into the secluded Hollywood Hills to meet a guy. A guy who had nothing but trouble on his mind. When I pushed the buzzer, I had the feeling of wishing I was someplace else. Carl Delaney himself opened the door. He was grim and brusque and to the point.
Marlowe?
That's right.
Come in, Marlowe. I appreciate this. You're coming up here after business hours, I mean. I wouldn't have asked, except, well, perhaps I waited too long as it is. Sit down.
Thanks. Waited too long for what, Mr. Delaney?
36 hours ago, my wife disappeared. Marlowe, you've got to find her for me. Find her just as fast as you can.
Wait a minute. Disappeared, you said? Would you mind playing that part back a little slower?
Norma simply walked out that door, got in her car, and drove off to get hold of herself, as she always does when we've quarreled. And always before, she's come back in an hour or so. This time
she simply didn't come back, is that it? Look, Mr. Delaney, I could...
You'd better let me finish before you do anything. Lately, my wife has been brooding over something serious that she refused to discuss. I've caught her crying several times, and she's not a woman given to tears. Marlowe, I'm sure that unless we move fast, when we do find her, we're going to find her dead.
Suicide?
Yeah.
With his thick, blunt hand, Delaney reached for a color portrait lying face down on the table and gave it to me.
I looked and saw the face of a dream. A beautiful dream with strange hazel eyes and soft black hair. I felt Delaney watching me as I glanced up in time to catch the fading end of a very ugly expression on his face. I handed the picture back to him and he laid it on the table again, face down. Then he took me upstairs to Norma's room. It was a nice, frilly room, typically haunted by elusive sweet smells. There was only one incongruous note. What was the horoscope doing on her desk? From the looks of her picture, I knew that Norma was attractive enough that she didn't need to look to the stars for her future. A horoscope?
Yeah, you know how women are. Marlo, will you find her for me?
Well, I'll try. My rate is $25 a day plus expenses. And remember, you hired me to find her, not bring her back.
Fair enough. You just find her. I'll be satisfied.
I'll need a starting point. Were there any phone calls or letters or anything that might be a lead? What about friends?
We have no close friends. Norma always stayed to herself. Wait, there was a phone call yesterday from Madame Jeanette, I think it was.
Who's that, a dressmaker?
I haven't any idea. She wanted to speak to Mrs. Delaney. I told her Norma was out, and she asked that my wife call her when she got back. That's all there was to it.
Anything else you can tell me?
No. No, it's not much to go on.
I'll see what I can do, Mr. Delaney.
I'll be here all night, Marlowe. Call me if you need anything.
I'll do that. Good night. I drove back through the persistent fog to Sunset Boulevard. It was 9:30. I knew it was going to be like tracking a hummingbird through the petrified forest by the bent twigs, but I got a classified directory and I started digging. I checked the hairdressers, the manicurists, and the milliners, and I was just about to start on the interior decorators when I remembered the horoscope on Norma's desk. I quickly turned to the personal consultants. Yeah, there it was. Madame Jeanette. Her establishment, located in the dubious neighborhood south of Olvera Street, turned out to be a tacky cottage set back next to an alley. It was as dark inside as out. I was pounding on the door like a vampire at sunrise when a newsboy came up the path.
Looking for Madame Jeanette?
Yeah, you know her?
Sure, she tells fortunes. Says I've got a great career line, you want to see it?
Not right now, thanks. And I'll say for her that she's a sound sleeper.
Maybe, but not so early as this. About this time, she's always hanging around that bar on the corner. Tonight, she's throwing a farewell party in there.
Farewell party? Who for?
Herself. She's leaving town.
Oh, thanks a lot. Here, kid.
Gee, a buck. My old man will swear I've been shooting crap again.
Give me another one, Charlie. Not every night I say goodbye to my dear old neighborhood.
Muscatel again, Jeanette?
Yeah. Did I say dear old neighborhood, Charlie?
I think you did, Jeanette.
Must have had one too many then. Because of all the low, flea-bitten row of shacks I ever lived in, this is the new low.
Aw, Jeanette, that's no way to talk. You hurt my feelings.
Pinky. There ain't nothing like a little beer to soothe hurt feelings.
Yeah, you said it. Jeanette, can I have another?
Yeah. Charlie, give Pinky another. Now, this is his last.
The last? I thought you said it was a farewell party. Hey, you with all your dough.
This dough's to get me out of this rat trap of a town, see? It's the last I want to see out of it in all my life, see?
Yeah,
another
we see.
Another muscatel, Charlie.
Hold on a minute, Jeanette. Hey, what'll it be, mister?
Something just a bit drier than muscatel. Say, Scotch?
It's on me, mister. It's my party.
Well, well, this is indeed a pleasure. You're the Madame Jeanette, aren't you?
Yeah, why?
You're all of 20 years younger than what I expected.
Probably the life I lead. Hey, wait a minute. Why should you be expecting anything about me? I don't know you.
Perhaps not, but I know you.
From where?
Oh, you're more famous than you think. Your reputation has spread far beyond Olvera Street. In fact, it's gone up as far as the Sunset Strip, Madame Jeanette.
No kidding.
How would you kid a fortune teller? Don't you know all, see all, and tell all?
Well...
And judging from that Spanish shawl, your Hungarian skirt, and those embroidered Persian slippers, I'm beginning to think your fame is not only local, but international.
Say, you're beginning to make me feel like I shouldn't be giving up this racket after all.
Giving up fortune telling? No.
Yeah. I'm leaving town on the midnight train. Gonna spread my talents all over the East, and I'm not coming back.
Don't tell me your crystal ball has laid a golden egg.
So to speak, yeah. I come into some lettuce. Suddenly.
That's always nice. Well, I guess it means you won't be interested in the few paltry dollars I'd intended to spend with you.
Hey, can I have another beer, Jim?
Shut up, Pinky Blow!
Ah, oh, just a...
Traveling lady can always use a little extra moolah. What was it you wanted, bud?
I'm looking for someone. Norma Delaney.
Norma I'm afraid I don't know anybody by that name.
I'm afraid you do.
What's your angle? Who are you, anyway?
I'm Philip Marlowe, private detective.
Some private dick you must be to have to resort to fortune tellers.
Come on, Jeanette, look into your crystal muscatel, see if you can spot Norma Delaney.
I told you once. I don't know the name. Now blow.
Just a minute, Doc Eyes.
Hey, Charlie.
Yeah?
This bird's crabbing my party. What kind of a joint is this, anyway? Lady can't sit here and have a farewell party without being insulted by every jerk that drops in.
Well, mister.
I haven't finished my drink yet.
You got pockets, ain't you? Just pour the drink into one of them and take it along. You ain't finishing it here.
Charlie reached under the bar for his pick handle, so I left without pursuing the subject further. But I knew Jeanette was lying right in her purple lipstick about Norma. I walked back to my car, lit a cigarette, and spent a few precious minutes trying to decide whether or not to break into her place and snoop. Then I caught the shadow of a figure slipping up on me from behind. I turned.
Wait, wait, don't swing, Mac, don't swing. It's only me, Pinky. I was in the bar when you was talking to the madam. Tightwad, Jeanette.
Yeah, I saw you, so?
She did something the minute you left. I figured you might like to know what it was.
It all depends.
Well, I thought it might be worth something to you, like a saw, maybe.
Come on, you,
no,
spill it!
Wait a minute,
spill
wait,
it!
Wait.
If it's any good at all, it's worth a five or no more.
All right, all right. She made a phone call.
Who to? What'd she say?
Nothing. Just some swear words in Spanish. The line was busy. But I kept my eyes open and I got the number.
All right, let's have it, if you can still remember it.
Oh, I can remember easy. Five of first, huh?
Here.
Thanks. The number was Crenshaw, 1929. But you get it? Like the year of the big crash.
Thanks to the thirst of an underweight lush, I wasn't at the end of my rope yet. I drove as far as the nearest drugstore, dropped a nickel in the slot, and dialed. Crenshaw. The year of the big crash.
Hello?
Hello, let me speak to Norman Delaney, please.
I'm afraid you must have the wrong number.
Look, you, I'm trying to locate Mrs. Delaney. I suggest you help me.
How did you get this number?
From a client, Mr. Carl Delaney.
But that's impossible.
Let's stop sparring. We can save each other a lot of wear and tear if we get together and talk this over.
Maybe you're right. Yes, that sounds sensible. I'm at the Beechwood Apartments, number 4.
Check. I'll be right out. Mr. Pierre Gillum, it says here on the door.
Yes. Are you the man who called?
Uh-huh. Philip Marlowe.
Come in, won't you? You said you were looking for Norma Delaney, Mr. Marlowe. Tell me, what's wrong? Has anything happened to her?
Well, her husband seems to think she might have killed herself, but I have a hunch that you might have something interesting to say.
No, poor kid. Poor Norma. Well, I'll tell you what I can, Marlowe, but it isn't much.
Oh, I'm all ears, and I'll sit. Thanks.
I was in love with Norma once, briefly, a long time ago. She was a wonderful girl, but her husband was insanely jealous.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she hadn't loved him for years, he refused to give her up. He even threatened to kill her first.
Oh?
Norma and I realized that serious trouble lay ahead, so we parted. Good friends. And I haven't seen her or heard from her in months.
I'd buy it all but the last line. You have seen or heard from her, and recently...
I'm not going to argue that. I've told you the truth. You can take it or leave it.
I leave it.
I suppose we both put our cards on the table. You lied to me when you said Carl Delaney gave you my number. I know because Madame Jeanette called me shortly after you did.
Touché. But why did she run to call you at the mention of Norma's name if you two broke up months ago? And incidentally, how did that ersatz oracle Jeanette get mixed up in this in the first place?
That is a long story, Marlowe.
Good, I like long stories. I'll bet it begins just for a lark. Norma and I went down to Olvera Street once to have our palms read.
Yes, that's exactly how it started. Madame Jeanette was an unusual woman, a character, you might say.
Uh-huh.
Well, we became friendly with her. Norma got quite sentimental about her. One day we made a sort of pact. If ever either of us was in trouble and needed the other, we'd go to Madame Jeanette or get a message to her. She would notify the other.
So when I walked in asking for Norma, the madam assumed she was in trouble.
Right, right. Called me immediately because she herself is leaving town in less than an hour.
I know. Well, Mr. Gillum, it's all very interesting, but it's getting me no place. Thanks. If I need you
again...
Oh,
no, wait, Marlowe, don't go.
Hmm?
I know a lot of details about Norma that I'm sure will be helpful. For instance, she drives a Nash coupe, a powder blue.
Powder blue coupe, huh? Thanks, that'll help.
Oh, and she has a fondness for white gloves. Wears them quite often.
I see. Well, I better get more.
No, no, wait just a minute, Marlowe.
I've got to go.
Now, listen, Marlowe.
I told you I was in a hurry.
Now, take it easy. Stick around a while.
Get away from that door.
Look, just who do you think you are? Come busting in here, prying, asking questions, you dirty...
Ooh! You asked for it, Gillum. Ooh!
You got a left, too, huh? So have I, brother. Left Gillum sprawled all over his coffee table, as limp as a 5-cent salad. Outside, I glanced at my watch. Madame Jeanette's train left in 40 minutes. I ran through 22 bucks worth of red lights getting down to a cottage because I was sure Gillum's attempted stall was tied in with the departure, but I couldn't figure out why. That is, I couldn't until I switched out my lights and coasted to a stop in front of her place. Then I saw it. Half hidden in the shadows back of the house sat a powder blue coupe. I got up on the porch close to the front door and listened. Jeanette was talking to a woman. I couldn't catch what they were saying, but one thing was certain. The woman was Norma Delaney. All at once I realized the talk had stopped. That was my cue. I shoved open the door and went in. Jeanette sat at a table alone, facing me.
Well, Mr. Marlowe, you've returned. What is it this time?
I'd like my fortune told.
Yeah? Now, listen close, Gumshoe. I'll make this a short and snappy reading because I'm catching a train in 15 minutes. There's a woman very close to you. In fact, she's right behind you, sucker!
What? Ooh!
When I finally opened my eyes again, nothing changed. It took me a long time to figure out that the lights were off and it was dark. I climbed up the table leg hand over hand and switched on a lamp. Jeanette's house was absolutely quiet. I had caught a glimpse of a white glove holding what is known as a blunt instrument just before I dozed off. And that reminded me what I was down here for. I wobbled through the kitchen and out the back door, but the powder blue coupe was gone. It was 12:15. My head and the fog both had gotten a little thicker. So I just stood there, useful like a ping-pong ball in a bowling alley. It was the sound of footsteps that finally moved me, and the newsboy was back.
Well, hiya again, mister. Did you ever get a hold of Madame Jeanette before she left?
Yeah, but not tight enough. Say, a blue coupe left here a few minutes ago. Did you see it?
Nope, I didn't. Gee, I'm sure sorry she went away. She gave me a buck tonight, too. Said she was coming into a fortune.
Hey, you and your career... Say, what's that down there, in those weeds?
I don't know. It looks like some kind of a shoe. Yeah, it is a shoe. Here, see?
What do you know? A Persian slipper. I took the slipper along as a souvenir for my scrapbook and walked back to my car, trying to fit Norma Delaney's lovely hazel eyes in with that crack on the skull. But I couldn't. Between throbs of my headache, I figured Pierre Gillum would know why Norma had dropped in on the madam so close to train time. I decided to go back and ask him. Gillum was as reliable as a two-headed quarter and just as tricky. So when I got to his apartment, I pushed the buzzer, stepped back, and braced myself. But there was no fight left in him. He opened the door in his robe, fingered the mouse I had given him, and grinned.
Oh? So you found your way out by yourself.
Uh-huh. Say, Gillum, what was so important about Norma seeing Madame Jeanette just before her train left?
I don't know.
Oh, You knew enough to try to keep me here, to delay me. Why?
Oh, Marlowe, I did that for old time's sake, for an old friend. Jeanette asked me to hold you here until midnight, and I tried my best. Obviously wasn't good enough. Well, that's all I know about it.
I see your phone is off the hook. Do you know that?
Yeah, I took it off. It's given me nothing but trouble tonight. I hereby wash my hands of this whole business. I'm going to bed. And I hope to sleep. Good night.
I envied him and left to call my client, Carl Delaney. He said he'd be in all night, but the phone kept ringing and ringing and no one answered. I suddenly got a very creepy feeling. And 20 minutes later, I pulled to a stop at that small but elegant house. The lights were on, and I saw the powder blue coupe in the garage next to Carl's big black sedan. I ran up the steps. The front door was ajar, so I went in. I found Carl Delaney in front of the fireplace, face down on the floor, dead. There was a handbag on a chair. I opened it, compact cigarettes, and a key to room 340 in the Bradford Arms Hotel. No identification. That color portrait of Norma was standing up on the table this time, and those searching hazel eyes seemed to follow me all the way to the telephone.
Lieutenant Ibarra speaking.
Phil Marlowe, Ibarra. There's a dead one at 1077 Hollycrest Road. Named Carl Delaney. Murdered.
I'll be right out.
I hung up the phone and then the hair on my neck crawled as I heard the unmistakable sound of a woman's heels on the floor upstairs. I ducked behind a door as the heels clicked down the steps. And then she entered the room. Norma Delaney was lovely. As lovely as a picture. She moved calmly and deliberately, put a note on the table, picked up the handbag, and then turned to face the door I was hiding behind.
You can come out now, Mr. Marlowe.
Hello, Mrs. Delaney.
You can call me Norma now. And if you're thinking of using your gun, perhaps you'll be good enough to read this note first. Here.
To whom it may concern, I, Norma Delaney, purposely and with premeditation, shot and killed my husband, Carl. It is beyond me to express how deeply I hated him, and since I must pay for this and cannot endure a public spectacle, I shall take my own life within the next few minutes. Now look, Norma, no guns.
Easy, Marlowe. I'll kill you if necessary. But it would be so pointless now. I'm free at last, and I want to spend the little time left to me in my own way.
Norma, if you'll listen to me...
Stay back.
Just a minute.
Tonight I made my only friend, Madame Jeanette, happy. And I killed a man who needed killing. Something good, something bad. So I'm quitting, even up.
What do you propose to do with me?
You mustn't try to stop me, Marlowe. See that closet?
Mm-hmm.
Get inside. And careful how you move your hands. Turn around to the wall. That's it. Marlowe, I'm sorry I had to hit you with Jeanette's tonight. Goodbye.
It took three shots to smash the lock on that closet door. I heard her driving away just as I got it open. In spite of what she'd said, I couldn't let her kill herself. I ran outside to my car. One glance under the hood was all it took. There was nothing left of the wiring but loose ends. I ran into the street and a miracle happened. The first time in my life, a taxi in Los Angeles when I wanted it.
I'm sorry, fella. I'm going to call.
Skip it. This is an emergency.
Hey, wait a minute. You
police
can't...
business. A girl is driving up the road in a blue coupe. We got to catch her before she kills herself. Let's go.
I think I saw taillights just then.
Yeah? Can't you go any faster?
Not on these curves, brother. I got a wife and kids.
Okay, fella. We'll be at the top of the hill when we can get around the next bend. We should spot her then.
Yeah. You can see the whole road down the other side. Here we are, mister. This is the top.
But I don't see her. Where is she? Hey, wait a minute. Stop here. Turn off your motor. This is haywire.
I don't get it. We were gaining on her, and now she just disappears. Hey, what's that?
A motor. That side road we passed. That's it.
Hey, look. Look! Holy smoke.
We both saw the awful sight for just an instant. A powder blue coupe with a woman crouched over the wheel. It shot out of that side road, crashed through the guardrail, and fell end over end down into the gorge. By the time we got to the hole in the fence, the wreck was an inferno.
Oh, no use trying to get down there. The whole hillside will be on fire in another minute.
I guess she pulled over here into the side road and waited for us to go by. And we did.
Yeah, it's sandy here, too. It's a wonder she didn't get stuck. What's the matter?
There's something buried here in the sand. One of her tires ran over it.
What is it?
Why, it's plenty, brother. Come on, turn that hack of yours around. Let's get off this mountain. I just found the answer to a lot of questions.
That you, Marlowe?
Yeah, Lieutenant.
We found the body and the wife's suicide note. Then one of the boys spotted that fire up on the hill. What is it?
Car went off the road.
An accident? Or the suicide?
Just a little of both, Ibarra, but we'll talk later. Right now, we gotta go to the Bradford Arms Hotel on the double, and please, no siren. The Bradford Arms was a three-story walk-up. When we got there, Ibarra stationed one man in front, sent another to cover the back, and we started up the stairs. We had reached the second floor when we saw him on the landing above. Gillum. He spotted us at the same time and turned back fast.
There, Marlowe. Who's that?
That's our boy, Ibarra. Here, Gillum, let's go.
There he goes. He's heading for the fire escape.
Second Lieutenant, he's all yours. I got business the other way.
Hey, you stop or I shoot!
Room 336, 38, 340. It's all over now. You better drop the gun. Please, it's been neat so far. Don't mess it up. Come on, beautiful, drop it. That's better.
Well, Marlowe, I got him. I had to wing him to bring him down, but here he is. And the lady must be...
Yes, Lieutenant. The lady is Norma Delaney. The girl who wanted to kill her jealous husband and then commit suicide, but didn't want to die doing it. So she used someone else's body, Madame Jeanette's, which was a logical choice because Jeanette was blackmailing her. Thus, two vultures with one stone, leaving two lovebirds free to fly away together. Right, Norma? Didn't you give Madame Jeanette money so she'd leave town and tell everybody she was going away?
Yes, I did.
That way the body wouldn't be missed, huh?
Yeah. Isn't it pretty?
Oh, lay off, Marlowe, can't you?
Okay, Gillum, okay. Ibarra, I've got a sour taste in my mouth. I think I'll go home and gargle. Anything else you need?
No, I guess not, Phil. I've had all that's necessary. Wait. Just one thing. How'd you get inside this setup? How do you find out it was the dead Madame Jeanette who went over the cliff instead of the very much alive Mrs. Delaney here?
Well, Jeanette had on a pair of Persian slippers, Lieutenant. One fell off down at her cottage where Norma murdered her and put her in the trunk of the car. The other one fell off in the sand of that side road when she took Jeanette out of the trunk and propped her up behind the wheel. It was lucky, Burra. Just dumb luck. I took a walk later, a long walk, all by myself, through that thin, empty fog in the dark, empty streets. A pair of hazel eyes and a pair of Persian slippers went round and round in my head. And for some reason, I kept thinking, a pair of Persian slippers has two soles and two heels, and it's hard to tell just exactly where the one becomes the other.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler, stars Gerald Moore and is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. In tonight's story, The Persian Slippers, Virginia Gregg was heard as Madame Jeanette, with Larry Dobkin as Pierre Gillum and Louis Van Ruten as Carl Delaney. The additional players were Gene Bates as Norma Delaney, Gil Stratton Jr. as the newsboy, Frank Richards as the barkeep, and Tony Barrett as Pinky. Detective Lieutenant Ibarra was played by Jeff Corey. The special music was conceived and conducted by Ivan Ditmars.
Be sure to be with us again next week at this same time when Philip Marlowe says...
Sounded good, real good. A weekend at Malibu, expenses paid with a cash bonus thrown in. But that was before I knew about the henchman, the redhead, and the corpse. These three and a white Panama hat ruined it all for me.
The big star-studded array of CBS Sunday shows starts tonight. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 top entertainment programs that make listening to your CBS station a happy habit. 1, Cabin B-13, the popular dramatic show by John Dixon Carr, renowned mystery writer. 2, the new Electric Theater, guest starring Henry Fonda tonight, and regularly starring Helen Hayes, first lady of the theater when she returns from London. 3, Our Miss Brooks, the hilarious comedy success starring Eve Arden. 4, Lum and Abner, a brand new half-hour show of smiles and chuckles with the Merchants of Pine Ridge. 5, Strike It Rich, the sensational quiz show with a heart to wind up the sparkling parade of entertainment. Mystery, drama, comedy, excitement tonight over most of these CBS stations. And next Sunday, the first broadcast in the new season for two of radio's greatest stars, Amos and Andy. Yes, Sunday nights are great on CBS. Check your local newspapers for program times. This is Roy Rowan speaking for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.